Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The Texans underwhelm on Monday Night Football. Is it time to panic? I don't know. We'll talk about that and more on this edition of The Bullpen. Welcome to the bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chaparria. Tom, how are you doing today?
Man, this one hurt. But I understand it now because, as I've said many times before, and I will continue to say many times, it is so rare that we get the Houston sports solstice where all the Houston sports teams win on the same day. It's so rare. So I don't know how Texan fans are going to feel about this, but somebody had to take an L tonight, and unfortunately it had to be the Texans. That's the only way I'm justifying this, because the Astros got a dub and it was much needed, and you know, it was pretty much like season ending. I believe next week is the Texans make or break season game now. But yeah, man, this game It's got so much to talk about. It left so much to be desired. Obviously, there's a lot of positives, a lot of negatives, a lot of just stuff, and we'll go from there.
We'll go through it. I mean, for me, I would sacrifice the silver boot for a win this week. The way that this loss affects the Texans' chances of making the post. Would think at least one time it's happened, but who knows? I mean, I can't recall off the top of my head the last time that happened. I mean, the score I think is deceiving. I think that when you watch this game, it would have been you hate when I do this, because this is how I sometimes, I think a lot of the early wins last season, I would say this, but if the Texans had won, it'd be a hollow win. I mean, that they didn't really show anything. There wasn't really any point in the game where I was like, oh, the Texans deserved to win this game. Like, they came out really hot with the offensive drive, and I was like, oh yeah, this is, the offense is back, we're good. And then the defense was flat. And then when the offense, or when the defense got it right, the offense couldn't produce, and we just went right back to where we were last week. I felt like I was watching pretty much the same game, except for I got a little less from the defense to start, which is interesting, because I don't know if I'd consider the Buccaneers a better team than the Rams, but the Texans held the Rams in check a lot better than they did the Buccaneers, and I think there's a few reasons for that, but we'll get into it. Starting first with the positives and negatives, I want to get one of each from you just to start, and we can kind of, you know, devolve from there. But what were your biggest positive and negative from this game?
I think it's impossible not to say the biggest positive from this game was the all-around play of the special teams. From Jalen Knoll to Jakobsen to just, I mean, you name it. Frank Ross, I know we talked about this before. I truly believe somebody's going to come for him. Like, I don't know if to be their special teams coach, I don't know if to be something else. Dude's got amazing energy. He gets the most out of his players. I think the Texans special teams is always really good. And it was really good today. Like they, the special teams did everything you could ask them to do to win a football game. And you know, I have to take that as a positive going forward. I think
Jalen, the only reason the Texans were in the game, especially late.
I think Jalen Noll is an absolute weapon. I believe that, you know, Tank Dell looked like him, but smaller. And I think, you know, they're worried about him being a little less durable. I think Jalen Noll has all the decisive moves, the speed, and I think he has the size to be able to be a good kick returner. And today he was amazing. Love the punt block. I mean, you never expect it, but when you get it, it's always welcomed. I thought they were really close a few times, you know. So the fact that they actually got home was really good. And you know, if that's the special teams we're going to get the rest of the season, you know, it just got that much easier to win football games. The negatives for me, and people don't want to have this conversation. I'll have the conversation. Right now, CJ Stroud is not doing enough to win football games. It's I don't know if it's all the way fair. You know, we're two games into year three. He's on rookie offensive coordinator number two. I think there was some personnel decisions that I believe lie with the offensive coordinator that are, you know, signs of a rookie offensive coordinator, you know, going with veteran guys over young guys, maybe. I'm looking at you, Dario Bungawale. I don't know that he needs to be on the field on offense anymore with the emergence of Woody Marks. Woody Marks looked really good tonight. I don't know that you need to go out of your way to play Dari. I think you drafted Woody for that. Now, is he going to make mistakes? Yes. Are people going to flip out when he makes mistakes? Yes. Do you need to not? Yes. Like you need to understand that I believe the Texans shied away from Woody Marks to this point in a larger role because he's a rookie and they want to bring him along slowly. I know some people don't like that. It's old school and no, if he can play, he should play. But, you know, you ruin a kid's confidence, and then what happens? You know, Ursary, we put him in a bad position last week, and he struggled, and, you know, he was supposed to struggle. And I thought maybe that would mess with the kid's confidence. Now, for everything that happened last week, I think Ursary played really good this week, and, you know, he was in a position to succeed. He was in the more favorable position for him. It worked out. But the offense, and I believe it starts with CJ because, you know, he would tell you that, is not where it needs to be to win football games. They need to be able to generate more offense. They need to be able to stay on the field longer. I think defense spent a ton of time on the field and you can't do that. That defense is so good when it's fresh. You have to give them the ability to get a break, to have sustained drives so they can come back fresh and wreak havoc and cause turnovers and do what we know they can do, what we believe they can do. And until we get to that point, you're going to see a lot of games like this. You're going to be very frustrated with the lack of offense. You're going to be very frustrated with how the defense looks because it has to live on the field sometimes. And we made this bed going out and getting a rookie offense coordinator, albeit from a legit tree, going, oh no, he can be the guy. And we weren't gonna wait for the mistakes. Now we're seeing the mistakes and people are panicking, going, oh, it's Bobby Slug 2.0, season's over, this is a disaster. I don't believe it's any of that, but these were the possible outcomes that could come from having a rookie offensive coordinator, a rookie O-line coach, and some rookies in some key spots.
Yeah, and to speak to your point, I mean, the defense, like I said, came out a little sluggish. I mean, I think the Bucs had their number for the first drive or two before they locked it down. Normally, if you have a complete football team that's a contender, that's not really an issue because your offense is good enough to make up for when your defense fails until they can get right. And we kind of saw that to an extent. I mean, we saw the offense on the first drive drove down for a touchdown, and on the second drive put up a field goal, kept it close, but then the defense picked it up and the offense went dead silent. So it can't be a thing where one is always off and the other one is always on. Like, it's got to be a point where both sides of the ball are working. And so to get into my positives and negatives, I think, you know, you kind of took my positive, but don't worry, while you were talking, I thought of another one. As hard as it was, it probably took the whole time you were talking for me to come up with this. But as much as, like, I agree with your negative of it being, you know, CJ and the offense just not looking great, I think a big positive, and I look back to when CJ was drafted, which is that everyone looked at his game against Georgia, the last game that he played. They ended up losing, but he had a really good game. And a lot of the talk was, you know, if it's happened once, it can happen again. And that's usually a term that's thrown around in the NFL scouting community when you're looking at a player and assessing them, is like, well, if he's done it once, that means it can happen again. We just need to draw that out of him. And so a big positive that I take is that that first offensive drive, every issue that we've had with the Texans offense was addressed and handled. Early on, there was opportunities for them to fall into things like, you know, first play out the gate, no yards gained, you're on second and 10. That's a play where the Texans would normally take a step back or commit a penalty, and they come up with 9 yards to make it a third and one. That whole drive just exemplified what we need to be seeing from the Texans offense most of the time. And so I would look at that, and I would apply the mindset of, if it's happened once, it can happen again. So as much as, like, I think Nick Cayley's stock is tanking worse than, you know, the Dow on whenever the Great Depression happened, but it's going down quick. I mean, because you know how Texans fans are. And that's why in our next, I put hot seat candidates, because we have to talk about everyone now, because everyone's saying everyone needs to be fired. Trust me, that's not an exaggeration. You should look at my replies. But yeah, big positive is the offense did something. I mean, that was something we didn't see week one. It's progression. There was a lot to be asked, but they did put up 2 touchdowns, and one of them came on a really good drive to start the game. And, you know, that's what they need to be doing. They're not always going to be able to defer when they win the coin toss in order to get the defense out there first. The offense is going to have to be able to produce. And so, big positive there for me. The negatives, there's a lot to choose from, but I would argue that the biggest negative comes obviously in the form of the offense. And I focus in on CJ, because to me now it's kind of like, in the past season or two, season and a half, you could look and we could assess that it was scheme. And we said, oh, well, when CJ can take over and run things from the line of scrimmage, it'll get better. And when he's put in a scheme that's more his speed, it'll get better. And so I'm not saying it's time to throw him to the fire and be like, why is our quarterback awful? But it's time to look at it more critically, because he's now in that scheme. He spoke all offseason to the fact that Nick Cayley is running a scheme that is what he's used to. It's what he thrives in. And so far, we haven't really seen any indications of thriving. We've only seen, at best, what could be called mediocrity. And there's also a lot of parts of CJ's game, and to his credit, right? This is stuff that in his rookie season was considered some of his greatest strengths. People are like, he hangs onto the ball too long. But like in his rookie season, people looked at it and they're like, oh, he has this great spin. Like, and he did it in this game. He spun, got out of the pocket. If Harrison Bryant wasn't, you know, on the ground instead of on his feet, it would have been a really good play. And that was something CJ did regularly his rookie season, but now it's like, well, CJ hangs onto the ball too long. And to that, I'll say, I mean, CJ hangs onto the ball too long because he's looking to make those kind of plays. And I've spoken to the fact that hero ball is something that is a product of the schemes he's been in the past. He's kind of had to bail out coordinators. And so that's something that's got to be coached out of him. He doesn't always have to be the hero now, but to that point, you know, he's now in a scheme that is supposed to be, per what he said, I'm not saying anything that CJ hasn't himself said, he's in a scheme that is everything that he thrives in, and we haven't seen it yet. So I'm still of the volition that we wait until the bye week before we make any strong, firm decisions on who should be fired and what the Texans should do with their deep future. It's still this season, and there's still a lot of football left to be played, but that is, to me, the biggest negative coming from this game, is that CJ... And I think JJ Watt said it best, when you have a signal caller, you know, if you don't, you're screwed. And if you do, that's like the best thing. That's what most important position in football. And for the past two, you know, seasons into this season, I think Texans fans have rested on the fact that we have a signal caller. And I think the biggest question that needs to be answered this season is, do we? And I think it will take time. I mean, it's a new scheme. It's a rookie play caller. I'm not saying like, you know, light the beacons, get ready to not tender CJ Stroud and go look for a new quarterback. But that's kind of what's at stake here. I mean, the Texans can put it off at least one more season if this season doesn't go well. But at some point in the next year or two, they're going to have to decide, do we want to pay, you know, the most money that any quarterback has ever made? Because that's generally how the quarterback market goes. You extend the guys to set the new market. So do they want to set the new market at quarterback for a guy like CJ Stroud? And I think at the end of the day, they will, but that is the question that needs to be answered. And so far, this campaign has not started off well in giving a positive answer to that question. So with that, I think it segues very well into the conversation of hot seat candidates. As I said, my replies, I've seen that D'Amico needs to be fired. I've seen that there's people wishing that the Texans would realize they need to tank because they need high draft capital to reestablish the entire organization, and that their hope is that everyone will be fired and the organization will be wiped to the ground so that they can start over and have a chance at producing a winning organization. These are not illusions that I've made up in my head. I know sometimes it feels like talking heads on social media make up enemies so that they can fight them out loud to themselves. These are real replies that I have received from people who are self-professed Texans fans that are kind of fed up with how this season has gone. So with that, we'll give it a go. I'll start with this. Do you feel like there's anyone in the organization whose seat is at least moderately warm to this point?
Are you talking with respect to players, management, all
players, management, anyone from, obviously the owners are the owners. They own the team. I don't think there's much we can do about that, but like anyone in a position that could be replaced, given that the ownership does not like the direction the team is going, do you think there's anyone who has a moderately warm seat at this point?
To me, right off the bat, I believe Damian Pierce's days are numbered. I think he was a healthy scratch in this game. They brought up Brish Brooks. Woody Marks looked really good. I really think that he fits what they kind of want. He looks like Joe Mixon light, and I think that's what they envisioned him as. I think they were trying to bring him along slow. I think after this game, you kind of feel like he needs to get more. I don't know anybody that's going to argue with that. I think Dare Ogunbowale as a running back, I think that is a done deal. For whatever he does on special teams, I think he should continue to do that on special teams. But as far as like pass protection, it's looked really, really bad. I think when you see that, and then he had that fumble week one. I mean, there are people that I saw on social media that are saying he's responsible for the two losses, him by himself, which is a lot. But you know,
it's a lot. It's not entirely off if you weigh things that way, but I don't know if that's how I would view it.
Like, I mean, you can't. You just can't. But there's so many other plays in a football game. But I could see where, you know, that would be a thing. I feel like that is as far as I'm gonna go with like hot seats. Are mistakes being made? Yes. Penalties have been an issue. Week one, it was the offense. Week two, it was the defense. But I feel like they're way down compared to what we saw last season. I know last season it felt like there was a penalty on every other play. Games just drug on forever. It's interesting that you brought up D'Amico Ryans, because I did a post-game show with Robert Land, Houston Sports Talk. Y'all should check it out if you're into that sort of thing. And he's kind of starting to sound like one of those guys that, like, these penalties are a D'Amico thing. Like, he's the coach. He's the guy that should have to answer for them. They should play cleaner football. If these penalties, you know, weren't in the, you know, 6, 7, 8 range, you know, maybe they win the game there. Maybe they win both games there. These penalties are drive killers. They're drive extenders on defense. And, you know, he's got to be able to coach that out. I don't agree with that. I think at some point the accountability has to lie with the players. D'Amico's not jumping on offense. You know, he's not committing a false start. He's not committing a face mask. You know, some of those players. A name that Rob brought up that I don't know how you feel about. It's going to be interesting. Is Christian Harris? Christian Harris played today, had a huge penalty. I don't know with all the injury history that he's had that he can't get back to being the guy that he was before. However, since he's come back from injury, he has not looked good. I thought he made a great play until he stuck his hand underneath the dude's face mask and then extended a drive that was on like the 2 yard line. So, pretty huge critical play that just ate up time, gave them the ability to reset field position, things of that nature. I really don't feel like any of these coaches are any kind of like trouble. People that I saw on socials wanted to go after the defense. I think the defense is on the field a lot tonight. And when you look at how hard it is to guard, you know, guys running up and down the field and then trying to pass rush and chase Baker Mayfield down, that's a lot. It's a lot to ask any defense. I think the Texans have done a phenomenal job with respect to defense the first 2 weeks of the season. You look at some of these other games around the league and go look at these scores ran up. Go look at that Dallas Giants game from yesterday and talk to me about defense. Go look at that Detroit-Chicago game and talk to me about defense. Detroit put up 52 points. You know what I mean? Like the Texans are elite defensively. I mean, Pittsburgh. I thought Pittsburgh was a great defense. The Jets went in there and threw up, what was it, 30-some-odd
32.
Points? Yeah, yeah. So, like, there are some defenses around the league that I'm over there going, oh, no, that's a solid defense. And then you watch teams run up and down the field on them. So, for me, I look at these Texans, you know, did the last touchdown absolutely suck? Yes, 100%. But they've lost both games by a combined 6 points, and they've given up an average of 17 points. I think when you do that, that's pretty good. 17 points is a very manageable number. So, yes, could they be better? That was Rob's thing. He was so hung up on, oh, I need this team to be elite. I need turnovers. I need sacks. I need them to kill and murder and maim. And I'm like, I get that. But it's not going to happen week to week. I respect some of these other teams being good. I think Tampa's a good football team. You talked to, you know, how the offense was able to just run down and score a touchdown. Tampa's got weapons. Mike Evans, very good football player. Both running backs in Tampa, very good running backs. They ran the ball very effectively. I'm not going to shade them for that. I mean, should the Texans be able to stop them? Yes. But I thought they played well.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
I agree with you. I do feel like the run defense was a problem throughout the game. As much as they, you know, overall were able to stop the Buccaneers, they didn't score as many points, at least throughout most of the game. I feel like it pretty much went like the Rams game in terms of like total point scoring right up until the very end when they actually, and it was a very different situation. The Rams were up 14-9. The Texans actually took the lead back against the Buccaneers, which activated them to actually try again, which creates a very different dynamic. But I do think that overall the defense did what it needed to do, and until proven otherwise, it will be an issue of the offense consistently scoring and doing what it needs to do. I think that next week going into Jacksonville is a matchup that, while I do give a lot of credence to divisional matchups and will not discount it as an easy win, I think it's an opponent that I think they match up with that might give them a chance to get right, might give them a chance to see what they actually have. They've been tasked with some pretty tough NFC matchups to start the season. But to look at the hot seat, like I'm not sure there's anyone in the front office, anyone in the coaching staff whose seat is even moderately warm. And this is coming from even if the most frustrated and impatient person should have the wherewithal to understand that this Texans organization has consistently shown patience with the coaching staff, unless they have an ulterior motive. I mean, obviously leading up to D'Amico Ryan's hiring, they went through two head coaches in two seasons. But I think that was probably motivated by the desire to have D'Amico Ryans or not having a better option, whereas the Texans, when they have their guy, have consistently given him a lot of time. I mean, Gary Kubiak got a pretty long leash before the Texans, you know, ultimately decided to part ways with him.
Bill O'Brien,
and he's a coach who went on to win a Super Bowl after he left the Texans, so he is a really good coach, and so they had reason to do that. If they feel that way about D'Amico, I could see this season going very poorly and them at least letting him start out next season as the head coach. I don't think that this season would have to go absolutely historically bad for D'Amico Ryans to not be the head coach next season and for Nick Caserio to not be the GM. And I think if we're looking at the two of them, honestly, if there's one person whose stock I think is on the shakiest ground, it's Nick Caserio's. I think that a lot of people in their heads have built up what he's done. And this is, preface this, I think he's done a really good job as GM, but I do think that the level to which it's been held kind of goes down in my head certain orders once you actually assess what's been done and what our issues are and what he's failed to do. I mean, at the end of the day, his handling of the offensive line, he has been directly responsible for it since, you know, there's everyone on this offensive line has been brought in by him. There's no one here that he hasn't been in charge of. He can't hide behind the fact that, well, Bill O'Brien traded all these assets for Laremy Tunsil and you know, kind of really tied my hands behind my back. Sure, yeah, in 2021, when you drafted Davis Mills with the first pick in the draft that the Texans had, which was in the third round, we're like, yeah, I give him a lot of credit. He's doing good with what he's got. But when you make so many picks across the board, I look at Juice Scruggs being a backup center after being drafted with a second round pick. I look at Blake Fisher not being trusted to take over right tackle so you can keep Titus Howard at right guard, which speaks volumes because I think Titus Howard's better at guard, but if you had a tackle that was really good, you might bump him in. And so I think there's a lot of things that point to, if I get to then, so here's what I say. If I get to the end of a season and I'm firing someone and I'm not firing both of them, I think I'm firing Nick. I think I'm looking for someone to that I think has a history of being the architect behind great offensive lines talent-wise, if I think that's the issue. If I think we have great coaching in place and that it's the talent that's underperforming, I have to move on from Nick. But like I said, I don't think the seat's moderately warm. I think the Texans could drop a 7-10 season this year, and I wouldn't even feel like we'd be close to moving on from anyone in the coaching staff or front office. So I feel pretty good about what the Texans have going right now. Looking at the game itself, offense and defense obviously struggled. One thing I really want to highlight, and we kind of already talked about it a little bit, is the special teams. Do you think, I feel like it's a dumb question to ask, but I'll put it out there anyways, just to spark the conversation. Braxton Berrios has been injured for 2 weeks. Is this the second instance that the Texans have had this offseason of someone losing their job because they were injured?
It might be. I don't know if they're gonna like completely like move him off the reservation, because I still think he adds value as a wide receiver, but I don't see any reason not to give Jalen Nowell all of the kick returning duties until you see something otherwise. Right now, everything I saw from him today, like, I think you ride that till the wheels fall off and see what happens. I mean, I think he's very comfortable in that role. I think it's a way to use him as a weapon. Berrios has a little bit of an injury history. So why on earth would you like risk him if you want him as a wide receiver? I think that Nowell makes a ton of sense. And if Braxton Berrios never returns another kick, I'm not upset about it.
I think he still could, because I think that you stand him next to Nowell when he comes back. I think that makes a lot of sense. But I do think Nowell has pretty firmly secured that position. It would take a lot. Like, even against the Rams in a game where he didn't necessarily do anything that was, like, you know, popped off the page as, like, super above and beyond, he was still very serviceable. But this game in particular, I think both of his first two kick returns went to the 35-yard line. He had two very impressive punt returns. Just overall, I think he changed the tide of the game, because if he doesn't have that punt return that he has, the Texans don't move into a position to, you know, kick that field goal. And then, he set them in a position to score the touchdown. And then that blocked punt put them in a position to kick the field goal. The Texans aren't in a close game without the special teams. And I think it brings up a point. You spoke to Frank Ross earlier. I think personally, hear me out on this, but I think that if there was a hot seat, if there was a discussion of shuffling the coaching staff, the Texans have kept Frank Ross at special teams coordinator through a massive shuffling of staffs and a few head coaches. If he coaches the special teams this way and they're the only reason games are interesting, I wouldn't be surprised if he's first on the list to interview for the Texans head coaching gig if that spot was to become available. I mean, I don't know. How do you feel? Do you think that he's at least earned that?
That's very, very interesting. I don't know what I would have to happen for me to get away from DeMeco Ryans. I know people are so impatient and they're so spoiled, and it's, I have to have a winner right now. And I mean, we forget DeMeco Ryans is in year three, and you know how long it took Andy Reid to win? Like, you know how much he bounced around before he won? Like, I do believe DeMeco should be allowed the same grace that we're giving CJ Stroud. I do believe DeMeco should be allowed the same grace that we're giving Nick Haley. You know, like, I don't understand this narrative that, you know, he's not a good coach and these penalties are a coaching thing. I'm like, where's the accountability on the players? Like, how many face mask penalties has DeMeco gotten since he started a head coaching job? You know, like that's not coaching. You can't coach that. What's he supposed to do? Now, I will agree, like, sometimes his use of, like, clock management and timeouts, now that I 100% lay at his feet. But when players make silly penalties, I can't go, well, coach, you got to make sure he doesn't do that. Like,
right. I mean, I think that's an advisor away. You've heard, like, Sean McVay has a sideline guy who makes sure he doesn't stray onto the field. Like, and I reckon there's probably someone there, but I think maybe it's a matter of, like, when you can identify your own weaknesses and look and say, hey, maybe I didn't handle the clock right. Instead of leaving that on your own head, having, like, a close, trusted advisor whose attention can be on that stuff. I don't know if you've played a lot of Madden in your life, but, like, the limit does not exist on the amount of times that I'll be, like, just so caught up in trying to move the ball down the field that I look up and I go, oh, shoot, there's 2 seconds left in the second half. I better call a timeout. I'm in field goal range. I gotta kick this field goal. I thought I was going for a touchdown. I watched the clock tick by to halftime and I'm like, I'm on the 1 yard line with 3 timeouts. And I didn't even know it was past the 2 minute warning. So I'm not trying to say that maybe that's what's going on with DeMeco, but I do think that it is a lot. I have to some capacity experience being the head coach of a real life football team. And I'll tell you, I relied a lot on the coordinators to give me a lot of information, because I'd get so locked in on certain aspects of the game. I'm like, oh, wait, what quarter is it, coach? I don't even know. I'm like trying to figure out what this defense is doing so I can line the offense up correctly. You know, these are junior Pee Wee kids. You have to do a lot for them to make sure that they're ready to go.
Well, it's funny that you brought that up, because this year that's what D'Amico's trying to do. He's trying to be more hands off with the defense and trying to get Matt Burke more of the reins. And I don't think, like, I don't think people are tracking to that. You know, I really think, like, yes, D'Amico is always going to have input, say, you know, hey, we should do this. But I really feel like if you watch him on the sidelines and you watch him closely, I don't feel like he's over there with, you know, the Denny's ordering menu, calling out plays like he used to when he first started. I think that's a Matt Burke thing, and he's just kind of in his ear like, okay, yeah, or maybe he'll have an input on it. He's trying to be that coach and deferring to these guys, but people still want to hold him accountable to, you know, the defense or the offense, and he's trying to be more of a manager of people. So I don't see an issue with D'Amico like that. I really think, like, I think he's doing a really good job. I really think that they played a couple of good teams close, and I haven't felt like, regardless of what I thought preseason, where I was picking, you know, to win these games, I didn't feel like they were outplayed or outclassed or, you know, just laid an egg. Could they play better? Yes. Do I think these teams are bad? No. Like we talked about the Rams at length. The Rams are a good football team. They're on a short list of teams in the NFC that could compete for something. I think Tampa Bay's not bad either. Tampa Bay went into Atlanta, beat them, albeit they missed a controversial field goal. They went in and won a game where, you know, they had to deal with Bijan Robinson and what he can do. I mean, we know as Longhorn fans, the dude's a monster. Like, that was a tough division rivalry game on the road. Went and got it done. And now they're 2-0. Like, I mean, I got to give them some credit to take some of the heat off this. Like, oh, well, they just lost to, like, the worst team in football or something like that. That's what the fans sound like right now. They're dejected, like they lost to a bad team, and I just don't feel that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as much as I give, like, credence, so we'll shift our gears. That's a good segue into looking ahead. The Texans, between now and the bye week, will play two divisional opponents and the Ravens. So if you count the Ravens as a loss, which I think a lot of Texans fans are, and I don't think the Texans are giving us any reason to count that as a win at this point, you have to sweep two division games in order to be in a good spot coming out of the bye week. So if you want to be 2-3, which I think a lot of people think the Texans need to be in order for hope to still exist, you got to beat two divisional rivals. And I'd say it, maybe not much like I said it would play out, but, you know, I said that the Titans were, you know, and I think I caught some flack. I can't remember. I saw a reply. I think this is a guy who had replied on my post about when someone had predicted the Titans would win the division. I was like, they're like a 7-win team at best, and the Texans are a 10-win team at worst, which could be words that come back to bite me. I don't know yet. We'll see. Because he definitely said, at least you're not a guy who said the Texans would win 10 games at worst, which is exactly the kind of guy I am. But looking at that stretch of games, I think that it becomes very important to win those games. Those are, I think, games where if the Texans look really bad against, even as divisional opponents, teams that just haven't really shown much this season, then you start to go, okay. That's why I say wait till the bye week. There's two games peppered in there that I think are good litmus tests for what the Texans are. And I do agree that heading into the bye week, they pretty much need to be 2-3 at worst. But how do you feel about looking ahead at that stretch of schedule? Do you feel the same way?
I believe that for the Texans to go where they want to go, everything starts and ends with the division. Like, they have to win their division. Like, and then after that, you start talking about whatever, right? There's a lot of parity in the AFC. I believe, like, you know, winning the division is probably first and foremost, and then worrying about seeding after, you know, depending on who's where and what their records look like. is how you attack that. So to do that, they need to handle business within the division. Jacksonville, Tennessee, Indy looks like, you know, an unstoppable freight train. Although I would argue, you know, who have they played that I'm afraid of? You know, the Miami team is so bad right now. Like, I throw that out. Like, I wish we would have played them. Like, you know, I really wish the Texans would have got Miami. They're very dysfunctional, and you know, yeah, they won an impressive game against a Denver team. But Denver bailed them out.
Yeah.
So they could easily be 0-2, you know, if they played better opponents. Instead, they played a couple cupcakes and they're 2-0.
Yeah. And I mean, I look at the Titans. The Titans have played slightly more challenging teams. They played the Rams and, you know, did not come out with a win. They came out with a pretty impressive Cam Ward highlight. But that's about it. And so I think that looking ahead, I understand. I'll say this. I understand panic mode because as a fan, it's not fun to watch your team lose the first two games. The statistical implications of that, along with the fact that the Texans are entering trying for their third consecutive AFC South title, which has never happened. There are a lot of statistical, you know, probabilities and numbers and things and events that are standing in the way of their success. And so to see it kind of things like this happen confirms in your eyes, oh, well, you know, this team is just not destined to be great this year. And then you start to kind of give up. But that's just never been the kind of person I am. I like to keep it optimistic. And I think that's why I was designed to be a Texans fan, because they give me a lot of things to need to be optimistic about in order to maintain my desire to be a fan of the team. So anyway, do you have any final thoughts before we kind of bring this episode to a close?
I do think that this team can win the next two games. I do think that, you know, we could get to that Baltimore game and go, hey, any given Sunday, right? Baltimore can be beat. Baltimore had a 15-point lead on Buffalo and Buffalo walked them down. It could happen. I think the Texans defense is so elite that if they get any offensive help at all, who's to say they can't win the next three games? Who's to say they can't, you know, the switch just be flipped on offense? I really feel like they're an offense short of being a legit, you know, Super Bowl contending type team, you know, AFC championship contending type team. And that's really all that's standing in the way. So I really hope that, you know, as they move forward, they iron out whatever it is they need to iron out, and score more points. They score another touchdown somewhere, and they're 2-0 right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you on that. If I'm giving my final thoughts, I'd say that I still believe that this is a 10-win team at worst. I mean, I think that there's things that need to be ironed out. A lot of people are down on having the early bye week, but I think it's nice to have that as kind of a benchmark. You go through your first five games and you assess the progression. Looking at the trend with this offense, you know, we go from no touchdowns, just producing field goals, to effectively moving the ball down the field, probably about the same amount of drives, but coming away with two touchdowns and a field goal instead of three field goals. The next logical progression would be to score more than that. So, and I think that going into Jacksonville, I think they're going to Jacksonville, is probably the point where you see that happen. And I know, yeah, they're going to Jacksonville, cause then the next week they're going to have the Titans there in Houston. So I still have high hopes. I haven't given up yet. I do have a lot of criticisms for this team, but I'm hopeful that it's inexperience and that they will sort it out. With that, thanks for tuning into this edition of The Bullpen. I've been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL wherever you get your social media. And Tom is TCTom1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. We have been the number one veteran-owned Texans podcasts in the world as far as we're aware. I would love to see someone tell us otherwise so that I can change the metrics to fit us being the best at something. Pretty much what I feel like my job right now is for the Texans is to run point and make them look better until they actually do look better. So we'll see. But yeah, so thanks for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.